Welcome to History and D&D. In our last episode, we discussed the 2010s and the release of 4th and 5th edition and how YouTube and podcasts played into that. From the 70s to the end of the 90s, imagine no cell phones, no internet, no streaming services, social networks, or virtual tabletops. I'm not suggesting that this is better or worse, it's just the way it was. You called your friends on a stationary phone, or you went to their house and knocked on the door. Hold on. Look. That's not weird. You're weird. You could watch reruns on TV, bike around the neighborhood, play in abandoned lots, or, and I'm just spitballing here, all of you could come together around a table, roll some dice, do some math, make some characters, and your control freak of a friend could take you through a dungeon until one of you disagreed with an outcome and everyone argued over the rules for the rest of the night. What was everyone else doing? I don't know. Probably dancing at some disco or making out in cars. In cars. So imagine that it's the 1970s and you walk into a hobby shop. There's a brown and beige box on a shelf. Dungeons and Dragons. What is that? And why is it a whole 10 bucks? You take it home, and you barely figure out what it is you have, but you do have some weird dice. Then you get some buddies over, and you run the game, badly, getting all the rules wrong without knowing it. But you could call up the guy who made it to clarify the rules. Man, that was crazy. Everyone had a blast. Congratulations. You're a geek, and this is now what you do with your weekends. I'd imagine the most common remembered experience of playing D&D is playing it for the first time. Figuring out what the hell the game is and how to play it is the first stage. Trying to get your friends to play is the second. And getting it all wrong the first time is the third. In the 70s, this would be particularly true, as the numbers of players would begin in the dozens to the hundreds, and maybe thousands in the first few years. So finding someone who knew the game and could teach you it was particularly difficult. Of course, most of the early players came from the tradition of wargaming and jury-rigging rules, so they were at least somewhat prepared. But let's say it's just you. This is a very common experience. You find this new game, you open it up, and maybe it's not one of the core books. Well, what is going on here? There's a lot of writing and tables, but the structure of the game is not clear at all. Of course, that's because the game comes from an earlier unstructured play tradition, and also it's supposed to simulate an unstructured outcome. Today, there's a long list of examples of user interface and onboarding to new concepts, but not so much in the 70s. That, and the fact that Gygax's writing reflected a style that was suited to in-culture wargamers. That's one of the main reasons the booklets can seem so impenetrable. Luckily, the game kind of sells itself, once you start playing it anyway. Warts and all, even if you get it all wrong, you and your friends will be hooked. This is mainly because it feels like you can do anything in the game. And in the 1970s, there was pretty much nothing like that. At that time, the world began its shift to a culture we would recognize today. People were fighting for the marginalized, youth culture was on the rise, there was a conservative backlash, and the rise of the new right, followed by an impeachment and resignation of President Nixon. As gender and class roles became less important, social mobility and norms began to shift. Pop music began to be infected by the electric guitars now dominant in rock and roll, and the energetic beats of disco. Music shifted from homey, safe, and pleasant, to loud, brash, and fun. Life became more libertarian. Dating became less of a preamble to marriage. Drugs and drinking in public became more normalized, and fashion became a statement of individualism. It seems that D&D's innovation and loose rule system were well suited to this time period. Or maybe it was the other way around. It's not that difficult a leap to imagine that all these changes in society, the new liberties, and think outside the box mentality in comparison to previous decades, led to a game in a box that allowed the player to do whatever they wanted. In its first decade, while the new game might have been birthed in this new culture and mirrored it, the mainstream seemed largely unaware of it. That would change by the end of the decade, though. In 1979, August, James Dalek's Egbert III would disappear from Michigan State University, and mainstream culture would take notice of Dungeons & Dragons, but not in a good way. This would not become apparent until the 80s, however. In the 70s and 80s, society was still burdened by the expectations of one's place in life. This meant that adults did not participate in activities supposedly meant for children. There were clear distinctions, but they were breaking down by the 90s. Marvel, and later DC Comics, were at the forefront of this change in sentiment. When the 60s revival at Marvel began with the Fantastic Four, Spider-Man, Hulk, the X-Men, as well as Iron Man and Thor, the age of readers slowly ticked up. Suddenly, comics were not just for children, and they weren't disposable. College students bought and read comics now, especially the new Marvel offerings. Comic book stores were opening, and the publishers were creating a new distribution model through them. With the birth of these specialty stores came plastic bags and cardboard backs to protect the books, which were now being collected. As the average reader age increased, the stories themselves shifted to a new audience, a more mature one. One comic that exemplifies this was Doctor Strange. The comic was very popular with college students, and especially hippies, due to its psychedelic art and stories. It was a comic that was accepted by those whose recreational activities included drugs and discussions of philosophy, religion, and Eastern mysticism. Interestingly, Doctor Strange's popularity in publication history reveals a pattern that is similar to that of Dungeons & Dragons. The character of Doctor Strange first appeared in Strange Tales in 1963. There were various wargaming clubs and conventions beginning in the 60s. Strange Tales was renamed Doctor Strange in 1968 and ran for 15 more issues. Gary Gygax and Dave Arneson met in 1969. The Doctor Strange comic was revived in 1974. Gygax created TSR and published D&D in that year. The main artist for TSR, and technically its first staff artist, was Greg Bell. Bell drew a lot of his inspiration from Strange Tales and Doctor Strange stories in particular. The Doctor Strange comic ran through the 80s and into the 90s up to 1996. TSR pumped out D&D products up until its failure in 1996 and sale in 1997. So the Sorcerer Supreme no longer starred in his own comic, and the company, Wizards of the Coast, gained control of all the sorcerers, warlocks, and mages at TSR. Doctor Strange would continue to appear in other Marvel comics, and D&D would go through third edition, which was released in 2000, followed by 3.5 in 2003, and fourth in 2008. From 2005 to 2015, several miniseries would start Doctor Strange, but his return to his own title would come in fits and starts. Fifth edition Dungeons & Dragons would be announced in 2012, playtested from that point until 2014, when it was released. And a Doctor Strange movie would be greenlit that same year, and then released in 2016. D&D's popularity would surge by the time Doctor Strange hit movie theaters. Let's go back to the 80s and the sad story of James Dalek's Egbert III. On August 15, 1979, after writing a suicide note, Egbert left his dormitory room in Case Hall at Michigan State University in East Lansing and entered the university's steam tunnels. He attempted suicide, but was unsuccessful. The next day, he went to a friend's house to hide out. Some attendees of Gen Con 12, which was held at the University of Wisconsin, located in Summers, claimed to have seen him. A private investigator named William Deere was hired by the boy's parents to find him. Deere suggested the disappearance was connected to the game, based solely on finding Dungeons & Dragons products in his dorm room. The investigator almost completely misunderstood what the game was, how it was played, and what the point of it was. He then shared that misinformation with the media, and therefore the public. Still officially missing, James Egbert attempted suicide a second time in New Orleans. After that, Egbert contacted the private investigator and returned to his parents. On August 16th of 1980, James Dalek Egbert III ended his own life. The investigator wrote a book about the young man, again misinforming the reader. He also continued to discuss D&D with the media, sowing more falsities. In the early 80s, a book called Mazes and Monsters was published and later turned into a TV movie starring Tom Hanks, who played a troubled youth who dissociated from reality due to a role-playing game of the same name. In 1982, Irving Pulling committed suicide, and his mother, Patricia, blamed his playing of D&D. She formed a group called BAD, Bothered About Dungeons & Dragons, with the purpose of regulations for role-playing games. She sued her son's high school principal and TSR, whose suits were dismissed, and she started publishing information about D&D and Satanism, as well as other moral failings she claimed the game promoted. In 1983, a Canadian film, Skullduggery, depicted a role-playing game similar to D&D as a tool of the devil to transform a young man into a serial killer. There were many reports on TV and newspapers about this supposed danger D&D posed. Most were full of misinformation and gave too much credence to people who have no idea what they're talking about. An episode of the news program 60 Minutes was devoted to investigating the allegations. It features Gary Gygax and Patricia Pulling. The graphic behind Ed Bradley, the host, depicts what appears to be stone tablets with the name of the game written in medieval typeface and a knife underneath. It seems to suggest something cultish about the game, which indicates that 60 Minutes was far from impartial. The host barely understands the game and boldly states that the allegations against the game are good evidence. From there, the show becomes a farce as ridiculous statements after ridiculous statement are presented as fact. Many more media reports attempted to connect the game to murders and suicides. When I was in elementary school, as I discussed in a previous episode, a double murder of two kids from my school by a teenager known to them was also connected to D&D. I won't go into detail because I was very young and don't trust my memory or perception, and there's almost no information currently available on the case, probably due to the convicted teen being a minor. There were two main results for the company that made the game, TSR. Their sales went up, and they removed all mention of demons and devils from the game's second edition. Of course, in the middle of the 80s, there was also a financial crisis faced by TSR, as the Blooms overproduced, overstaffed, bought company cars, and dredged up a 19th century shipwreck. This would be followed by Lorraine Williams pushing Gary Gygax out of the company. If you're interested in more on that, I covered the company drama in episode 2. The results of the satanic panic for players was that beyond being mocked for being a geek or nerd by their peers, they might also have to deal with adults, especially religious leaders, trying to prevent them from playing the game and turning their parents against them, or both would look at them as if they were Satanists. If you grew up in a religious household like I did, and chances were much greater that you did 30 years ago, then this became an even bigger issue. It's pretty hard to find information on the community as it existed before the internet. What I mean is that you can find many things mentioning D&D, especially the articles and news reports on the Satanic Panic, but the frequency of video, audio, or even writings about playing the game is sparse. Except for what you can glean from the two magazines that TSR published, Dragon and Dungeon. These have been archived online. If you want to delve that deeply into the past, you can find them. One interesting video on the early days of the game is from a YouTuber, Matt Colville. In it, he interviews a friend who was active in D&D back in the time period that it began. To find that interview, look up Matt Colville on YouTube. Find the video titled Interview a DM Jim Murphy from November 2016. It is also located in his Running the Game playlist between episodes 25 and 26. I recommend that entire series if you have the time for a new perspective on how to run D&D. Many episodes of the official D&D podcast called Dragon Talk have interviews with creators from throughout D&D's past, including former Wizards and TSR employees, and others who were active playing the game in its early history. Plus, they do a segment where they ask the person that they're interviewing how they first got into D&D. And those stories are always enlightening, although they're strikingly similar. Basically, someone's older siblings or older kids in the neighborhood had books and they somehow acquired them, or they found a book and they bought it and it wasn't a book that explains the rules thoroughly. It was a monster manual or something like that. And then they play the game badly, and then eventually they get the real books and they play it with their friends. But each story is unique. Recently, I watched a documentary called The Secrets of Blackmoor, which covered the period before D&D was published. It's a very deep dive into one side of the genesis of the game. It's a topic not often discussed, and it focuses on Dave Arneson, the co-creator of D&D. I definitely recommend it to anyone interested in this sort of thing. I would very much love if the people that produced this documentary were to make more episodes. And it seems, by the end of that documentary, like it was meant to be serialized in some fashion. I'd love it if more people made documentaries about Dungeons & Dragons, especially the early days. I could use the material. One thing to note about the final three decades of the 20th century that contrasts with now, there were a lot less entertainment pathways, meaning to occupy your time with diversionary amusement, you're completely offline until the end of the 90s, mostly. Instead of social networks, streaming services, movies at the touch of a button, TV shows to binge, or various other activities anyone these days finds on the internet, the world prior to the 2000s didn't have such easy access to bread and circuses. The available activities consisted of reading books alone in your room, watching TV with a schedule that you had no control over, long telephone conversations, sleepover parties, and games of tag. There were sports, board games, long bike rides, exploration of construction sites, and class trips or dances. This isn't an exhaustive list, just something to give the youth of today an idea of what it was like back then. We made our own fun, for the most part, and hardly any of it was packaged and delivered to us. It was analog. Today's world, with its opportunities and availability of entertainment, is better in many ways, but those of us who grew up before the internet can wax nostalgic about the unconnected world we left behind. What I want to get across is the sense that with limited opportunity for diversions, we spend a lot of time pursuing a smaller number of interests. An example of this is video games. For those of you into retro video games, you might have noticed that the games are harder, they lack an opening training scenario, they expect you to figure them out, and they're repetitive to some degree, also less immersive. This is because they were fine the way they were in our time, as our expectations were pretty low, because there were fewer things competing for our attention, and we had more time to devote to figuring them out. So enter D&D. Tons of books, stacks of adventures, and a wide body of literature devoted to helping you augment all that with imaginings you pulled out of nowhere. It was perfect for that time period because you could occupy so much of your time. And that's an odd thought because by all counts, it's now more popular than ever. But from my vantage point, the popularity is built on something else, maybe the opposite of the ennui we experienced back then. People in both time periods cherish the belonging that came with the shared story and game. But in today's world, it seems like there's this added sense of slowing down. People seem to want to get back to a sense of integration and personal connection with others because their lives are full of high-energy pursuits and misconnections as they move through the highly globalized economy and interact with more and more strangers. To many, the relationships and connections they experience on a daily basis seem like shadows of something more real, and maybe a game around a table or even a virtual tabletop feels more real. Maybe for many, it has more depth and is something they were longing for and didn't know it. If you've ever taken an introductory philosophy course, you'd likely have been told of Plato's realm of forms. The basic gist is this. Several people sit in a cave and stare at the wall. When animals pass by the entrance, they cast silhouettes on the wall, and the people call those shadows by the animals' names. But the philosopher has left the cave, having seen the actual animals, and when that person tries to impart this knowledge, they are often ridiculed. What I'm trying to get across is that many people can feel, from time to time, that their experiences are too ephemeral now, and that this has led some of them to seek out things like tabletop games to return to something more real. That's a wild thought, considering that D&D is a game of pure fantasy. So the world shifted from the analog to the digital. The various communities of gamers in the early days around the world started connecting through clubs, newsletters, and fanzines, and then came magazines, conventions, BBSs, and newsgroups. When the World Wide Web was born, there were rudimentary websites and forums, which finally led to YouTube, podcasts, and Twitch streams. In the next episode, I'll talk about my influences and recommend things that I think can help your game. This has been History and D&D. Hadad, I hope your day is free of thunderbolts.